KFI AM 640. Bill Handel here on a Tuesday morning, April 13th. And one of the premises, platforms that the president ran on was lifting kids out of poverty. As a matter of fact, I think that's one of his major legacy attempts, he wants to be left with that legacy of lifting kids out of poverty. And that's really important to him. It really is, and has been for many, many years. A couple of issues I want to bring up about that. First of all, a general view, overview about the way we work in the United States. I am not an exceptionalist, which means that when I hear we are the best country in the world, in many ways we are. But it's a little more complicated than that. Infant mortality, education of children, child poverty. Ask a family that can't feed the kids and say, is this the best country in the world? That's a tough one. It's a tough one. So we are probably the highest rate of child poverty in the industrialized world because we just don't have much of a safety net. That's simply the way we operate here. So the American Rescue Plan is to bring kids out of poverty. This is what Harris said, to do what has long been overlooked. We cannot, in public policy, subordinate them. And so there is this huge, massive amount of money that is being thrown at this problem. And I happen to believe that that is a priority in this in the United States. I have a very hard time understanding how we can have as wealthy a country as we do and have kids not eat. I just don't get it. And so this new law comes in and will provide almost all American families $3,000 for each child of the age 18, $3,600 for children under five, a near universal child allowance, which is $2,000 more than before. And the money is available to low-income families that previously have been excluded. And the concept of this child allowance is real simple. Lift kids out of poverty without creating a big new federal program, no bureaucracy. Just write a check. Here you go, parents. And a study by the National Academic Academies of Science, this was done in 2019, that this benefit, like the one that's now in place, would cut child poverty nearly in half, bringing 10 million children above the poverty line. And they looked at different options and saying this is by far the most effective way to cut child poverty. Here's the problem. It's for 1 year. So next year, the kids go back into poverty. What good is that? A single mother with two children this year working for $15 an hour would see a 25% increase in her income. And therefore, that's enough to raise her out of the poverty line, raise her above the poverty line. You know, when this child credit, incidentally, there's also a child credit where if you make below a certain amount of money, the government just writes you a check. That has been going on forever. And here is an interesting sidebar story. Do you know where this child credit came from, this refund from the government for extraordinarily poor people? It was part of Contract for America in 1994 by Newt Gingrich. He's the one that came up with it. Now, originally, he backed the credit as a form of tax relief for middle-class family. It was limited to middle-class families. It was not extended to poor families. Well, a couple things are going on. Democrats, with backing from some Republicans, argued for expanding it to low-income households. And since we don't have much of a middle class anymore, now what we have is a very wealthy class and a class that is not so wealthy. All right. We used to have a middle class that literally ran this country, ran the juggernaut of the economy. The taxes were paid by the middle class. The wealthy didn't pay taxes because there were so many loopholes. The poor never pay taxes because they just can't afford it. And so now that has switched completely to where the wealthy pay 80% of the taxes. The middle class, well, how much do they pay? Everybody goes for the middle class. You ever notice that? That all these politicians talk about the middle class. We have to make the middle class more secure. We have to make the middle class on a better tax base. So anyway, we've got 1 year. And then we'll see what happens. And then the cost is so astronomical. Then you're talking about the Republicans just caving. And we're talking about trillions of dollars of deficit every year. All right. Coming up, let me see what we're going to do. Black colleges and police academies within black colleges. Haven't heard about that one before. There's one, and it's just the start. This is KFI AM 640. Let's check in with you. Good morning. Bill Handel here. It is a Tuesday morning, April 13th. We are discussing policing and police misconduct, and excessive force in the Chauvin trial is going on. The defense is now presenting its witnesses, and it was the fifth officer to arrive on the scene is testifying. I have no idea what the defense is asking of him. I'll find out later on this afternoon. Let me tell you what is going on. While at the same time the black community obviously is extraordinarily upset, and rightly so, of the way policing is done against black young men. That's sort of a given. There is a Lincoln University, which is a Jefferson City, Missouri, and it has the first police academy at a historically black college in the United States. Now, when we talk about a police academy, it is a course. I mean, you pay tuition for it. It is similar to the police academies that people are accepted and then they are into the academy, and that's paid for by the police department. This is different. This, you pay tuition and then you try to get a job as a police person. And at first, this young man, Tyrese Davis, he wouldn't even tell anybody because of the harassment he was afraid to get. But then he said, you know, this is my career. It's not their career. I want them to realize I'm going to make a change. That's what we need. And the change is from the inside. It's not forcing the police to change their policies from the outside, which clearly is happening, but also from the inside. And it seems to work, because here's what happened. There's a research study that was done published in Science. Hispanic and black officers use force less frequently than white officers, especially against black people. There is a very good reason why there has to be a push for minorities. And there's a lot of room out there. Why? Because when you talk about police departments right now, they are shedding cops like crazy. And they're trying to recruit and retain officers. And one of the ways of becoming an officer is to go to college. Is to get a degree, criminal justice, that gives you a heads up. And part of that is an academy training. And that's exactly what's happening at this first college in Jefferson. And the number of police are dropping like crazy. It is really difficult because perceptions are changing dramatically. And here you have young men of color who realize, and in this case, it's through the first academy of this college, a black college in the country, realize that real change can also come from within. That is important. That is critical. I mean, it used to be where you didn't see women cops. They didn't exist. Now, when there is a major story of a police department and the police chief comes out and gives a press conference, how many are women that you see? An extraordinary number. How many are women of color that you see? An extraordinary number. And that's change from within. And it is, I think a lot of people don't understand there is an aura about policing. It's very hard work. Officers spend their day dealing with social problems, homelessness, mental illness, substance abuse, and then in those tense moments, I'm talking about with their literally life-threatening moments, when a gun has to be pulled and the adrenaline is going and split-second decisions have to be made. You know, frankly, I'm convinced that a lot of the decisions that are made correctly happen to just be luck. Because training doesn't cover all of it. People make mistakes. And it is... I remember I took two simulations at police, one at LAPD, one at the Sheriff's Department, where I was handed a gun, and it was a laser gun. And I was there with a cop who was my partner, and different scenarios were put in front of me. And knowing that it wasn't real, knowing that this was a simulation, my blood pressure doubled. I was breathing hard. It was crazy. I had no idea that was going to happen. Now, can you imagine that within a real context? All right, talking about the police, we're going to have a little bit of handle history here. And this is going to be a little bit of fun. Police cop shows, the history of the media and the police, and L.A. being literally at the start of this and being at the center of this, Southern California. 70 years of cop shows taught us how to actually legitimize the police. And I'll share that story with you when you come back. This is a fun one. Handle history moment. KFI AM 640. Let's check in with Jennifer. Bad boys, what you want, what you want. Hi, AM 640, Bill Handel here. Good morning on a Tuesday, April 13th. The defense in the Chauvin trial is now putting on its case. There was a shooting yesterday at Tennessee High School. A student fired at officers. He was in the bathroom. The police said, come on out. Well, he did, shooting. And he was killed by the officers. And demonstrations in Minneapolis are going on like crazy because of the shooting of Duante Wright, where the police officer Potter says that it was an accident, that she actually thought it was her taser. And certainly if you look at all of the evidence, there's an argument for that at least. I want to talk about police for a moment, because that seems to be a topic that we're all talking about. Back in 2019, polls found that the police were actually one of the most trusted public institutions in America, not among African Americans, but certainly among whites, more trustworthy than Congress or journalists or even religious leaders. Well, come 2020, George Floyd dies at the hands of the police. And then you have the protests against police brutality spreading across the U.S. And the police are acting in a way that is aggressive. And it is de-escalation was not that big a deal. And so it is obviously we've come to a real crossroads. So let me explain what happened with the movie business and the television business and the way we look at the police, which has a great deal of influence. The International Association of Chiefs of Police adopted a resolution condemning the movie business for the way it depicted police officers. The movies, they complained, made crime look like fun and glamorous. And the police were sometimes made to appear ridiculous. That was 1910. That's how far back that goes. And it, by the way, that was true. The movies did tend to make the police look ridiculous. The Keystone Cops, if you remember those or you studied those, I mean, people are going to remember those. They were bumbling pratfalls, and it was silent films. And then there was animated police dog shorts from 1914, 1918, showed a police force unable to prevent Officer Piffles, a good dog, from getting his owner into one scrape after another. And even in 1917, Charlie Chaplin's Easy Street, one of his great classics, he is a police officer, and the only way he's able to save the girl from a mob of criminals is accidentally sitting on a drug addict's needle and picking up superpowers. One of the first great superhero films. Well, today, there's not much of a problem in that regard. Recently, over the last decade, the depictions of police are heroic cop after heroic cop. We have reactionary heroic cops. We have liberal heroic cops. We have white heroic cops. We have black heroic cops. Cops who work outside the system, Clint Eastwood. Where cops, even when cops are doing wrong and breaking all the rules and all the protocol and all the training, they do what's right. They catch the bad guy. And they never face a problem. Why? Because they're always right. So the cops of the 1910s, where did that come out of? Why that philosophy? Well, you make fun of people who you hate. And the cops were hated in the early 19th and 20th, early 20th centuries. They were corrupt as hell. LAPD, so corrupt. Here in Los Angeles, one of the most corrupt institutions that existed. There was a commission that was formed, the Lexow Commission, you know, just studying it, 1890. Ran more than 10,000 pages, found just in New York State, the police extorted $10 million from the public each year. What you think is $10 million in 1890? And that actually, that report drove 30 years of police reform efforts. And here's a little bit of history. That's how Teddy Roosevelt built his reputation and became a national figure. He cleaned up the New York City Police Department. So now we have all these reforms. The public's perception of the police changes. It also helps the movie industry. And why did they change? Well, because police were able to use censorship and they had the power. Whenever there was a police drama being made, the cops had the ability to censor it. And especially with police dramas where police force is used. And so the studios needed the police to cover up the misdeeds of the stars because the stars were crazy. They were out there getting caught doing drugs, getting involved in drunk driving, and the police were there to help. And so there came the combination of a real partnership. And then came 1951, and there was a change. And I've got a personal story here, by the way, I want to share with you. So we're going to take a break and go back to 1951, where there was a major change in how the media viewed the police and how it changed our perception of the modern day cop. And we'll be back with that. KFI AM 640, and let's check in with... Morning Crew on a Tuesday, April 13th, as we finish the show. Some of the top stories that we are carrying. The Chauvin trial, the defense is up. It's not going to be very long for the defense. There isn't a whole lot for them to say. It's going to be a very uphill struggle, and already some of the witnesses aren't helping at all. Also, Johnson & Johnson, their vaccine is put on hold temporarily because six women actually developed blood clots, very rare blood clots. And if you like going to the movies, ArcLight Cinema, Pacific Theaters, shut down. No movies for you. At least at those theaters. I want to go back and finish up with how the media has portrayed the police and how we have looked at the police and considered the police through the media's eyes. Starting at the turn of last century, where the police were buffoons, they were the Keystone Cops. All the way through the 70s, the 80s, where cops were heroes, even though they didn't follow protocol. There was no thing as Miranda rights. They were all good guys because in the end, the bad guys were killed. And we're talking about black cops, white cops. It didn't matter. All right. So now let me tell you where it really started in terms of the perception of cops as heroes. Dragnet, 1951. Television show, Jack Webb. It was just great. Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. Just a quick word, a personal story. I actually dated Jack Webb's daughter in high school. And it was, it didn't work out very well, to say the least. Anyway, he was LAPD Detective Joe Friday. And this was as real as it could be, obviously showing the positive aspects of policing. He was surrounded by real cops. The LAPD gave him police cars, gave him cops as extras. I mean, they gave him everything he needed. However, he had to pay for it. And how did he pay for it? The LAPD had to vet every single script, the Public Information Division. But, and that went on for years, that show. I love that show. It was Joe Morgan, I think, was his sidekick, if memory serves. After the success of Dragnet, let's look at all of the TV shows that idolized police officers. Highway Patrol, the FBI, Columbo, Hawaii Five-O, Hill Street Blues, Law and Order, and all of the series that it spans where cops are just good guys. Even to the point where, there was an episode on Blue Bloods in 2014. A black suspect throws himself out of a third floor window to frame a white officer for police brutality. Even to that point. Well, that switched again. And what we have now are shows that are far more realistic, and I love these shows. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Wire. I don't know if you've ever seen The Wire. It's one of the greatest cop shows ever. I love The Wire. Realistic, gritty. It does a wonderful job. It features sympathetic cops. I mean, it does talk about cops being good guys, but also bad cops. It features corrupt cops. And The Wire, incidentally, because it was just a few years ago, considered wildly ahead of its time when it debuted, and this is 2002. And I cannot tell you how good that show is. And you want to look it up. I think it's streaming on some service. So what's the future of police shows? Well, I think the way we're looking at policing is going to be looked at in a very different way. It's going to be far more realistic. I think there's going to be a lot of negative shows about policing. There'll be shows that are somewhat objective. There'll be pro-police shows. Remember the show Cops? We were just talking about that with Jennifer Jones Lee. The first reality show was Cops, in which cameras followed police all over. It was actually body cams, but they were cameras that were following them with camera people. And here's why I think we're going to see it all over the place, because the networks aren't going to control this. It's going to be Netflix and Hulu and Amazon that are going to pay for and put these shows on the air. And they have no problem going to, I won't say extremes, but going to the depths of a problem. And I think that's the way it's going to go. We don't know. In the months since the George Floyd protests, not only have the police procedures taken totally different paths, but also you're now seeing shows dealing with this issue, dealing with the police, dealing with training, dealing with protocols. Matter of fact, Law & Order SUV featured an episode where Olivia Benson had to face the question of whether she unconsciously racially profiled a suspect. That is quite a ways they have gone, to say the least. All right, we're done, guys. Another show under our belt. Coming up tomorrow, Jennifer Jones Lee starts at 5 a.m. I'm here from 6 to 10. Also, we're going to be covering the Chauvin trial. We'll be talking about what the testimony was, certainly covering everything that is going on with COVID. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as you know, has been pulled off the shelf for a small period of time. And I'm here, and Gary and Shannon are up. And by the way, do me a favor, get vaccinated. You know, if not for you, for the rest of us. You know, I mean, you want to die, knock your socks off. But for the rest of us, please, Handle and the Morning Crew, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.